All right, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 19. It's been a minute. We had some scheduling problems. We're just gonna miss like a couple days, and then my tooth fell out, and I had to get that fixed. It's a not a big deal. It sounds like a big deal, but it's not. Don't worry about that one. It's a temporary implant thing I had done. But we're getting into a new series. We're gonna start of famous, well, maybe not even famous, but notable scientists in biology. So biologists, but we're going to cover all of them: zoologists, herpetologists, botanists, all that. And we're starting out with an interesting one, Robert Mertens. So if you've been around animals, you've probably heard of this guy, but actually haven't heard about him. We'll get into more details on that later. Older fellow, born in 1894, died in 1975, this one. And he was born in Russia, but he moved to Germany at a young age. And then, Alex, you kick us off with what he did a little later in life when he got an education and did some cool stuff.
Yeah, so he moved to Germany, obviously, like you had said, and then he started to work at the. I'm going to murder this name because I do not speak German, and I am sorry, but the Schenckenberg Museum in Frankfurt. That was in 1919, which is actually kind of, I mean, to me, kind of cool because I have kind of connections to 1919, the year itself. My job I work at now was founded then, and my great grandmother on my father's side was born that year. But in 1919, he stayed there at that museum until he retired in 1960. Which I don't know about you, but that's impressive to me because I definitely have yet to find a job that I would be willing to stay for what 41 years.
Yeah, and he was the professor there. Well, he was a professor there for a bit. That is true, but from 1947 until he retired, he was also the director of the museum too. So he was pretty bigwig in the museum world, and like that, the
Wore a
more
lot of hats.
nerdier style of like, yeah, book learning. He was a lot into that. Speaking of book learning, he was the author of several books. A couple of them got translated to English and were fairly popular over in Britain. And so a lot of knowledge came from there back in the day when all you could learn about animals from was books. He had a couple of those. And another quick little note, nine species and two subspecies were named after him. And the example I'll give you guys is Varanus mertensi. Oh man, that was a bad one. That one is the Mertens water monitor. It's an Australian species of monitor lizard. Really, really cool species. One of my favorite ones. But not the one that prompted us to even look into this guy. It was the day gecko. It was, I believe, Felsuma mertensi was the one. And so that was. And then I was like, hey, I wonder if that's the same Mertens as the water monitor. And then we looked into him. We're like, wait, this guy's actually pretty interesting. And I'll bring us into this next bit a little bit too, because I want to discuss it. It's kind of neat. So obviously this guy lived in Germany in the early 1900s. Not a great time to be in Germany, but this guy was a museum man. He was a scholar and all that. He worked over there, not really involved. But what he did do is he utilized the field post system that the Germans were using in Africa to be able to expand his herpetological expeditions. And so he was able to exploit the military to herp better and learn more about stuff, which is a really smart way of like going about all of that, taking advantage of war in a way to advance science. Kind of neat. One other point I'll bring up too, just on this one, is during the war when that started breaking out, he actually dispersed his collection into small cities and towns that were away from everywhere. So that way, when inevitably Germany lost that war, everything wouldn't get destroyed. So that's really cool too. Like, true man of science as far as that goes, just preserving the knowledge over everything. regardless of any sort of political belief, good or bad, he just was like, no, we gotta save all the information first. That's really cool. Big fan of that.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's, it's amazing half the stuff that we wouldn't, or like all the things we'd be missing if he didn't do stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's, I'm really impressed at that, utilizing of the field posts like that. They're just pre-set up camps. So he did a ton of work in Africa, a lot in Australia as well. I believe it was 7 countries he collected specimens from. I believe that one's just off the top of my head. That one isn't written down in our notes. It could be wrong. But he did a lot of work in those places. And a huge part of that, as unfortunate as the war is, he was able to use all their resources to find out more about cool lizards and snakes.
Yeah, which is just amazing. Because, like, I mean, especially with, from what we know with that kind of, that war and that time period and stuff, the fact that he was able to do that kind of stuff while that was going on is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, imagine being a soldier on either side, like, either side of that war. You're in Africa, and you just, there's just this guy out here. You come back to camp, you're just, like, happy you survived, and this guy's just got, like, some little containers with lizards in them, and it's just taking notes, and you're just like, what? Are you kidding? Like, this is what we're doing?
Yep.
I'm out here fighting wars, and you're out here being like, no, dude, gotta check this out.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly
lizard, right? Like, what?
You'd be like, oh, look, there's the enemy. Ooh, a lizard.
Yeah. Or you're on the other side, you're like, wait a minute, this guy, is he
chasing lizards?
He doesn't have a gun or anything. Like, what? He's just looking at snakes. Okay, I guess. I guess.
You do you, sir.
War zone. Let's look for snakes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was super cool. There's another cool bit about him too. Like, speaking on kind of on that, is Mullerian mimicry, also discovered by a German fellow just before Mr. Mertens did. So we're gonna have to. So this doesn't. That's why we use the word Mullerian rather than Mertensian, but you wouldn't be wrong in calling it Mertensian mimicry, which a lot of you guys will know is like the coral and milk snake thing, where this style of mimicry is where one animal tries to look like another animal, so that would be dangerous, right? Like, milk snakes will attempt to look like coral snakes, so they appear dangerous and animal other predators don't want to mess with them.
Just like just like how we talked back in the Pityophis episode, where they'll like kind of flatten out their head and their body so they and rattle their tails so they look like a rattlesnake. And their patterns also look similar to rattlesnakes, but they do everything they can to make you think they are a animal you don't want to mess with.
Yeah. So Robert Mertens actually discovered this independently. So it was for a brief moment called Mertensian mimicry, where that same thing, you know, one animal is impersonating another one for some reason or another. Think about like mimic octopus. If you haven't seen those, go on YouTube, just type mimic octopus. Really, really cool critters. Probably the world champions of Mertensian mimicry.
Yes, I'd say or so.
Truly as it should be described, Mullerian mimicry. Just Müller happened to discover it first, so he gets the namesake, even though Mertens kind of discovered the same thing. A lot of his work was focused on coloration, so he would do a lot of things about why are animals patterned in the way that they are, specifically reptiles. He did a lot of work on that stuff. Super cool.
Yeah. He also, another thing that he was known for was that he had a massive collection of reptiles that he kept as, I guess, not, I wouldn't say pets, probably not, but of like specimens and stuff that he'd collected. But of that specimen that he collected, one of them was a Savannah twig snake, also known as, I'm going to butcher this again, Thelotornis capensis. And he actually, that snake specifically, was his quote-unquote downfall, because the snake bit him, and he then proceeded to document everything that happened to him from that snake bite, because this is a venomous snake, which took 18 days. And then he finally passed away from said snake bite.
Yeah, and that's a pretty nasty snake bite. Not exactly, but this snake specifically is similar to the boom slang in the way that it's actually a rear-fanged venomous snake, which we tend to think aren't dangerous. We'll think things more like Boega that people will keep and get bit and they get a little itchy, or even like your hognose snakes, and it's not really a big deal. These guys are a big deal, so even though technically they have to chew their venom into you, it doesn't take a whole lot of chewing to get enough done. And he was 80 years old when this happened, and as you get older, you're not quite as durable as you once were. And especially back then, I mean, 1975 was when he finally kicked the bucket. Still then, medicine was not great, and anti-venom isn't a general thing. So you can't just be like, I have anti-venom, I'm cured. You sometimes need all the way down to species-specific anti-venom, and there still is not any for any of these rear-fanged venom snakes, to my knowledge. Like, I still believe if you get bit by a boom slang, you're done. I just hope you ride it out. Same thing on this Thalatornis. If it gets you today, still, there's no medicine. You just ride it out and hope you make it. Potentially, maybe like an amputation. Maybe. But,
I mean, yeah. Their venoms are so weird because it's, yes, it is deadly most of the time, but it's a very slow acting deadly venom. And also, it's not, I wouldn't say as deadly as like most front fanged or fixed fanged or.
Yeah. It's just different whatever. Styles, man.
They're all different. There's so many.
So differently. Like, this one took 18 days to kill him.
Yeah.
Right? That's a while. Some
a
snakes.
Long time.
Yeah, some snakes do not take long at all. I was just talking about the blue coral snakes from Southeast Asia, specifically Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And those, they will kill you very, very quickly. Just how their venom works, it basically fires all of the muscles in your body at one go, and that paralyzes you. You can't move because your muscles are all constantly flexed, so you can't relax any muscles to move, and you just a very quick acting venom, so it just takes you right out. And some of these other ones take longer and longer and longer to kill you, depending on how the venom's supposed to work. Remember, venomous snakes, the biggest one in the world, Ophiophagus bungarus, for those not involved, that is the new king cobra. The genus Ophiophagus, or the king cobras, just got redone, and bungarus is the new true king. Ophiophagus hanna is no longer the true king cobra. Even though nobody's going to call you on it if you call them any of the Ophiophagus king cobras, close enough. What was I saying about those? I lost it. I got onto those nerdy topics.
You were talking about their size and...
Oh, yeah. Even they, there's no shot they're eating a human. So venom is meant to kill very small things. So when you give, even though it can kill a person, it's not meant to kill a person. So it sometimes takes a lot longer to get rid of us. Or it'll just rot your arm off.
Yeah, which is not fun.
All right. But so back to old Robert and his death. He has one of the coolest quotes of all time, as far as like a deathbed quote goes. So this is translated from German, so it could be cooler in German, because German's a kind of cool language. They have some cool words. But he said in his notes as he's dying, old man, own pet snake taking him out, this is the only appropriate demise for a herpetologist. Like, dude, that's sick. As far as like,
that's absolutely bad.
Yeah, like, that's pretty, like, come on, man. But yeah, So the reason that we kind of wanted to, that's really kind of all the information we have on him, because there's not a lot of it in English, and there's not a lot of it in general. Unfortunately, he grew up, or not grew up, he lived and did a lot of his work in time of war. So reporting on things like his personal life was just not in the books. You know, he was just cranking out work and trying to, you know, survive. He was not in a great time. So there's not a ton of information on him as a person. So we kind of wanted to cover this and be like, you know, he actually did a lot. And he did some cool stuff, like all that coloration work, described lots of species that we keep today, did the was bitten by the snake and documented it. Again, that's mostly in German, so don't understand most of it. But all of that stuff he did, and really interesting. Like, it's cool to get a realer side of it too. A lot of these scientists grew up in times of peace, because that's a good time to do science when you're not worried about getting bombed. But he didn't seem to care about that. He just kept on going, doing science through all of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing all the science and stuff that we do have from him, like the information of all these animals and species and stuff that we have from him, versus just not him himself, which I feel like is probably like connected to the fact that when he was alive and like doing all this research and stuff, you know, that's kind of, there's other more important people around, and not that he's not important, because obviously he's extremely important, especially to herpetology and things like that, but there was more, I guess, precedent for other things, so they probably just weren't really looking for like that kind of people to keep information from.
Yeah, they weren't going to give him an interview on the news and talk about the cool stuff he's been doing.
No, not like they would nowadays.
Yeah, so they, and then you, sorry, I'm saying here, late recording today. So and when he got older and the wars and things were kind of over, that was when most of his books came out. And still, most of those books are only in German, so if you don't speak German, they're kind of useless. But a couple of them did pick up some steam, but again, those were kind of nerdier. That wasn't a biography or an autobiography. That was a book about, you want to learn about lizards and snakes? Got you covered. Here you go. So, not a ton on him. But they're cool. I do want to read one of them just to have it. I like that kind of stuff. Super cool.
Yeah, I mean, he is an amazing herpetologist. There's a reason we picked him to be the first scientist that we did one of these episodes about, because we think he's amazing. We think all the stuff he's done is really cool. We know a lot of the species that he had, and never really fully clicked until we really started looking into this, of like all of these species that are named after him, and the mimicry that was technically not named after him, but it was for a while, but it's not actually, and all that stuff. But like, it's the wealth of knowledge and everything gained from him is, I guess, unattainable, I would almost say, with what we got from him. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, and during that time too, like, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, during one of the worst periods in history.
Yeah, and that was when most of his information got collected. He just compiled it into the books and things later on, but he took advantage of all that was going on and was able to collect tons of information out of it. Yeah, and I mean, he was smart about it too, like distributing his collection outside of all the larger cities. That we saw how that went. Not all those cities ended up in a great condition after that. So he was smart. He preserved all the information. Like, he really made the most out of a bad time, as far as science is concerned.
He really did.
But with this series, I think, I'll name a couple, like one that I want to do specifically. I want to do one on Matilda Smith. I think she is not technically a true botanist. I don't want to call her a true botanist. She's a botanical artist and one of my favorites, and I think she needs more coverage. She is another cool story and did a lot for showing the masses, before we had pictures of everything, she helped distribute what plants looked like to everybody. So I think that's really cool. Like, I want to do more stuff like that in this series, rather than just talking about the more famous people that people know or is current. I want to do more underground stuff. So these episodes will probably be shorter because a lot of these people don't have a ton of information on them. Like, this is what we gave you is nearly everything that we found.
Yeah. I mean, like you'd say, we don't want to do the people that like everyone knows and everyone's like, oh, I already know all this information about them and stuff. But it's, we want to do the ones that people are like, or we think are really cool and people are going to listen to it and go, oh, I didn't even know this person existed or like any of this stuff. Now then they're going to get you to want to go out and do it yourself, do more research yourself and learn more about them and grow your knowledge as a person. And like, yeah, I know, like, you had said, I know you had said your person you wanted to do, and I, one person I want to do, which I'm very, actually would be very excited to do, is someone who is still alive, but is a very influential entomologist, Doug Talamay, or Douglas Talamay. For people who don't know, he is a entomologist, but he's so much more than that too, because he's written all these books and stuff, basically of trying to tell people how to do things at home, like just plant things outside and stuff, or different things like that to help the ecosystem and help create safe spaces, like with native plants and stuff. And it's an amazing person, amazing things that he's done. So eventually we will do an episode on him as well.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we were talking about on this one. Like, we want to find more, like, unsung heroes, almost, of science. Lots of people who were born into bad times, did a lot of research in times when it was tough to do it, maybe broke the mold a little bit, did something that at the time was controversial, but now we're like, wait a minute, this is very important. Like, we don't necessarily want to do it on Charles Darwin. Great dude. Like, arguably the most influential person in biological sciences. But we all kind of know about him, and we know a lot of the work that he did. But you don't necessarily know about these littler guys who also put in some important work, just not quite as famous for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we want to do, is show people that people, or show these amazing scientists that not everyone's going to know about. And some of them, obviously, like I said, or some of them are going to be some famous people, like Doug Talamay. I'm sure there's a few people listening to this who know that name. But we're still going to do other ones that people don't know of, and we're going to try and bring them to the light to kind of show people, be like, look at this amazing scientist.
Yeah. So, short episode today, guys, just because, like I said, not a lot of information, not a lot of, and even less in English. So, a lot of it is in books and journals and things that are just in German, and they're handwritten, some of them too. Like, I found some copies of his notes that there's pictures of his notes, and I can't translate that. I can't just copy and paste that thing into Google Translate. So, don't really know what it says. There's some cool stuff. We're going to leave a couple links to, like, articles we read, because we didn't just completely plagiarize articles in here. So there's a couple little golden tidbits here and there of cool information we just didn't cover. Not that we didn't think it's important, but you really want to learn more, you can read more in those links down below. But yeah, any closing notes you want to add on here?
No, I think we're up pretty well. Sorry again for the gap in episodes. Had a lot of things happen. Obviously, Shaw losing a tooth, and then a couple of weeks we just, one of us was sick or the other was sick. Things happen. We're hoping to try and get back on track and be more regular. We may be switching from Friday postings to Saturday postings. We're just going to kind of play around with it and see either we continue Fridays or just start posting on Saturdays. Let us know what y'all think. Would you rather have episodes on Fridays or have episodes on Saturdays? Down in the comments, just let us know. I might make a little poll down in the comments too, if y'all want to answer that for us. But other than that, I hope y'all enjoyed this episode, and I hope you come back to listen to more. Or if this is your first episode, welcome, and I hope you enjoyed it and that you go and listen to all of our other episodes on YouTube and other podcast places like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Yeah, don't forget to like, subscribe, leave us a review, and check out our social medias and stuff. They're also down in the comments. And we will see y'all next week.
Yeah, have a good one, everybody.